We're hearing a violin concerto by the esteemed Korean-American composer Earl Kim from a Naxos album featuring violinist Cecilia Arshefsky with the RTE National Symphony Orchestra of Ireland under the direction of Scott Yu. Scott Yu has been a longtime champion of Earl Kim's music, and at the end of Kim's life, the two collaborated on an important project for New World Records with the Metamorphosen Chamber Orchestra, which you co-founded, a project to record significant song cycles composed by Kim, an album named A Critic's Choice by the New York Times. Scott Yu was featured in a 2024 documentary titled simply Earl, about Earl Kim, produced and directed by award-winning filmmaker Ty Kim. And here's what you told us recently about the importance of Earl Kim and the documentary.
Earl Kim was one of the greatest composers of the 20th century. He really was a giant. I can say this with great delight. He was the worst self-promoter I have ever heard of. He had no idea how to do it, and it's kind of the reason why nobody knows who he is. But I think what Ty did to really make a real monument to the man in film, I think that's a great service to Earl and his widow Martha and his daughter Eva. But also, I think it's great for American music because he has a Korean name, but he was absolutely an American, and he grew up in California, and he's as American as they get. So I hope people will watch that documentary. It's very cool.
Scott Yu speaking with us about the award-winning documentary, Earl. As we heard, you observed, and put it carefully, that Earl Kim was a master American composer, but that his deep humility led him to concentrate on his music, and as we will learn in the film, his work on behalf of peace in the world, rather than on self-promotion. And Yu believes that efforts by musicians to perform Earl's music and by media professionals are doing something very important to help the world that Kim cared about so much encounter the remarkable music that he has written. It's fascinating to learn about Scott Yu and his own life in music. Here are just some of the highlights of his biography. Yu is the chief conductor and artistic director of the Mexico City Philharmonic and music director of Festival Mosaic. He is host and executive producer of the acclaimed PBS series Now Hear This, presented by Great Performances, the first show about classical music on American primetime TV in 50 years. Yu has led the Dallas Symphony, the Indianapolis New World, San Francisco and Utah Symphonies, the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra in their Elliott Carter Festival, and in his Carnegie Hall debut. In Europe, he's conducted the English Chamber Orchestra, City of London Sinfonia, L'Orchestre Philharmonique de Radio France, the Odense Symphony, the Estonian National Symphony. In Asia, Yu has led the Yomiuri Nippon Symphony Orchestra in Tokyo, the Seoul Philharmonic. He recently conducted the London Symphony Orchestra and the Royal Scottish National Orchestra in recordings for Sony Classical. He's a proponent of the music of our time, and he's premiered 79 works by 41 composers. With the Metamorphosen Chamber Orchestra, he recorded Mark O'Connor's American Seasons for Sony Classical and John Harbison's Chamber Orchestra works with soprano Dawn Upshaw for Bridge Records, nominated for an NPR Performance Today Award. And yet, in spite of all those remarkable achievements and more, he spoke in a very playful way with Karagami.com about his undergraduate years at Harvard. Yu was excited to be in a place where, in his words, everyone there is smarter than you. He continued, though, that there's a flip side to that. You're the dumbest guy on campus. I'm not kidding. It was humbling. And yet Yu went on to graduate with a BA in physics with honors and to demonstrate amazing musical talents and prowess before graduating. But he also told Karagami something very consequential that he experienced at Harvard. He said, like any other school, Harvard had good and bad professors, The good ones were the ones who could convey complex material in a way that allowed all their students to understand it. The professors who taught me the most were the ones who made the best analogies. They communicated the material so well that even a dope like me could understand. So I try to host Now Hear This in a way that doesn't assume knowledge, that makes it relatable. And that's a key for us right now. Scott Yu has become the host and executive producer of the acclaimed PBS series Now Hear This, presented by Great Performances. And season 7 will open tonight at 9 on WVIA-TV with a program devoted to Johannes Brahms. We know the phrase history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. And it's lovely to see a reflection of what Scott told us about the powerful talents of the humble composer Earl Kim and the way that a documentary filmmaker stepped in to help those talents reach out across the world. In an interesting way, it was a producer for PBS who recognized Yu's tremendous musical talents, but also his gift that he was recognizing in his professors at Harvard, as we heard, the ability to communicate with people in an engaging and impactful way. We had a chance to speak on Zoom with Scott Yu about the delights of producing Now Hear This and why he hopes those efforts are important.
In 2016, I was giving a concert / explanation of the three Brahms trios. It's something that we do at my festival in California, which is called Festival Mosaic. We give these kind of museum docent's guides to a piece of music, whether it's Mahler's Fourth Symphony or the Brahms trios or whatever, just any piece of music. So we did one of those presentations in California, and then we went to Austin to do it again. And I was very excited about the one in Austin. I, in fact, spent extra time working on it. And when it came to deliver that presentation, we were in a 350-seat hall, and 7 people came. And that was not so great. Anyway, the next day we had the actual concert, and that went just fine. And one of the audience members came back after the concert and said, "Hey, I enjoyed your concert." And I said, "Thank you." And he said, "But I really enjoyed what you did yesterday." And I was a little bit puzzled because 4 of the people in the audience were my college friend, her husband, and their children. So I just wasn't expecting to meet anybody from that event. And he said, "My name is Harry Lynch, and I'm a producer for PBS, and we should make a TV show together." And, you know, it was just something kind of out of the blue. And I'll expand the story a little bit further. The odd coincidence is that somebody said nearly the same thing to me 2 months earlier in Seattle. I did a talk on the Kodai duo with my good friend, Beyond Sang, the wonderful cellist. And I was explaining why the Kodai sounds, quote, funny. Why does it sound ethnic? And that's because Kodai only uses the black notes on the piano. And somebody came backstage and said, "Hey, I work for American Public Media and we should make a TV show." And I got so excited. I called my wife and I was so excited. And of course, nothing happened. So when Harry came back to me and said, "I'd like to make a TV show," I was just very skeptical and I just brushed it off. I said, "Oh, that's so nice." I didn't get his name or number or anything, and I just left. And then, you know, it was 2 months later, he said, "This is how I think we should make the show." He had a wonderful vision for it being a travel show. And, you know, 10 months later, we were shooting the pilot in Venice and Milan. And then a year later, it was greenlit by PBS. So it, once the idea was born, it happened super fast. It was really fast.
When we watch what you have accomplished over the seasons, Scott, you are somebody who is fundamentally curious. You're curious about all kinds of things. Of course, about the composers and when they lived and where they lived and those sorts of things, but curious about the food and what makes a place compelling, as we'll find out this season with Istanbul and Iceland. And if there is any way we could say a place influences a composer or vice versa in a certain sense, right?
Yes. I mean, you know, some of my favorite scenes are the ones that we make where I don't have a violin or a baton in my hand. I mean, those are fun because, you know, learning to do a certain type of artwork in Turkey, or taking an elevator that's generous. It's not really an elevator, it's just like a window washing unit down a gigantic hole down a volcano. What I love about this job is that I constantly ask myself, where would I have gotten the chance to do X? And I think the honest answer is I would have never gotten that chance. And the fun part of making the shows is that we are hopefully giving the audience a chance to see something that they've never would have ever seen, or something that they never would have ever heard. I think that's the fun of it.
And what struck me was that you just spoke to the music educators in Chicago at that very important session, 150 years, wow. And what you said in the report that I read was that music should be, or could be, or is nutritional. It's not a luxury. And so what you're doing here, even though you literally bring in food in many cases, you are opening up music of all kinds. You're taking us to Turkey this season. And in so doing, you're opening up a realm that feeds our soul.
Well, I think so. I mean, the point I was trying to make in Chicago at the MTNA convention was that, I would never argue with anyone that it is more important to feed a child for a dollar than it is to fund a museum or a symphony for a dollar. I will never make that argument, ever. It's always more important. But the argument I am also making is that, once you've fed that child, once you are fed and clothed, is that it? I mean, is that the end? And my argument is no, that's not the end. I mean, we have to be living, but we can't just be living just to exist. I mean, there is a reason to live. And of course, family is an important part of that, and friendship, and natural beauty. But I argue that art is a very essential part of the human experience, and without that, our souls go unnourished. And I think that's very important.
And you spoke about that fortuitous meeting in Texas with Harry Lynch, and you were talking about Brahms, and you open
Right.
this season with Brahms. Are you getting to Brahms now this season and bringing anything from that experience and your love of Brahms chamber music to what we'll see?
I think so. We were very hesitant to touch Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, and Brahms, because how do you do that in one episode? And what we decided to do with those, I mean, not they're all heavyweights. I mean, these are all giants. Florence Price is a giant, and Amy Beach is a giant, and Copland's a giant, and Bach's a giant. But we decided for the ones who put out that vast corpus of music that we would go narrow. And so in the Bach episode, we only really were talking about three pieces of Bach's violin music, because we'll go back to Bach and talk about his vocal music or his keyboard music or his religious music or what have you. We can go back to Mozart. We did Mozart. We concentrated on his piano concerto and the art of writing a cadenza, but we could do, so many other things in Mozart or in Brahms. And so in this episode for season seven, we decided we would just focus on the triangle between Brahms and Schumann and Clara Schumann, and how his chamber music evolved in his lifetime. And we can do his orchestral music in four seasons, when the right opportunity comes along.
People who love Brahms and Schumann and the era know the motto, of course, Frei aber einsam. And you call this opening program of the season Free But Alone. When you help us go through this, what is it personal freedom from human interaction? What was that about?
I've read a lot about Brahms. I've thought about Brahms for, many, many decades. And besides the obvious that he was one of the most creative, one of the smartest, one of the most inspired artists, one of the most inspired humans to have ever walked this planet. One thing that does strike me with Brahms is that he definitely was very much inside his own head. You can't read what he wrote or look at the process in which he worked. I mean, he wrote 20 some odd drafts of his first string quartet. he wrote 20 different ones and threw them all away because they weren't good enough to be the successor to Beethoven. Took him years to write his first symphony. Making the episode, you do realize that he was really in his own head, and that what happened to him personally absolutely had an effect on what he wrote. You cannot divorce the art from the life. The man and the art are one and the same.
And one of the things that's so important for us here in this corner of Pennsylvania is that Rick Benjamin is a dear friend of the station and so many people here. And we've talked with him for years about his recordings and most recently about his World's Fair selections that they've recorded, Paragon's recorded and so on. Tell us about the delights of spending time with Rick Benjamin to talk about Scott Joplin.
Well, you know, one of the things I really do love about this show is that we really do get the best. And I think when you're talking about the expert on Scott Joplin, I think you would be hard-pressed to come up with another name other than Rick Benjamin. I mean, he just really was an encyclopedia of the composer, of the man also. And he plays beautifully. And I actually had some friends in the Paragon Ragtime Orchestra. I didn't realize they were in the group. So it was kind of a nice reunion to see them. You know, it was just, I will never forget riding around in a Model T Ford. I mean, that was truly something that I pinched myself and thought, where else would I get this chance?
He had a hat on in that clip. Was it a flat cap or a motoring cap? You didn't wear one of those hats, did you?
I did not have a cool hat like he had. I do have to say that I think that Joplin has been kind of distilled into a few pieces, three or four pieces. But when you see the volume of work, I mean, he was a prolific composer and his tentacles stretch until this very day. I'll say that.
Pick one more, Scott, you might want to tease for us so that we see the range of the season.
Sure. You know, I am very proud of the work that we did in Turkey. I think it's one of our best episodes. We spent almost 2 weeks in Istanbul. I think the name of the episode is The Call of Istanbul. And I have an old friend named Fazıl Say, who is a wonderful, wonderful pianist and wonderful composer. So we spent a few days with him and we went inside buildings that were, this is now 2000, the year 2025. So we're talking about 2,500-year-old buildings. The ones that were 400 years old were new buildings. We ate Turkish food. We did Turkish art. We did everything in Istanbul. And we visited a rug merchant in Istanbul who was like the top rug merchant in Istanbul. And I think that for those PBS viewers who are curious to know what that part of the world looks like, I think that they should definitely check out the Call to Istanbul. It's a really good one.
We know how stressed the funding for the arts and humanities is right now, but it's such a salute to you and the work that you do that you continue to be able to produce such high-quality programs. And when we turn to our viewers and say, oh, please support your local regional public television station, we can point to something like this and say, this is what your dollars make possible.
I would say that the small and regional stations are the ones that need the funding first. And I know that we are a nationally televised program, but if you don't have PBS affiliates, then nobody's watching. So the funding's got to start there. And I've heard anecdotally that member stations are getting increased support because people are really realizing how important it is. But I can't stress enough to your listeners, Erica, that we cannot take for granted the content that PBS puts forward. Of course, nothing is guaranteed in life, but for sure, these are lean times for PBS and for its affiliates. And this is a good time to support because I think PBS and I think its affiliates are doing their best work ever, like right now.
Scott Yu, who is the chief conductor and artistic director of the Mexico City Philharmonic and music director of the festival Mosaic, among many other responsibilities. But for us today, it's crucial that we know he is the host and executive producer of the acclaimed PBS series Now Hear This, presented by Great Performances, the first show about classical music on American primetime TV in 50 years. And the series, Season 7, opens tonight at 9, and you can see it on WVIA-TV. And the subject is Brahms, the title Brahms Free But Alone. And you will explore the inner life of Brahms in Germany, and he'll have as his guests a pianist and a couple of cellists, and they'll perform some Brahms. And that's the way the series gets underway. Episode 2, Everyone Loves Joplin, a look at the King of Ragtime with Rick Benjamin's Paragon Ragtime Orchestra, based here in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. Episode 3, that's The Call of Istanbul, and that's the following Friday. That explores Turkish music from Anatolian folk to jazz, featuring his friend, Scott Yu's friend, Fazıl Say. And what's wonderful is we're hearing Fazıl Say now. Oh, but he loves Mozart. He plays Mozart magnificently, and Fazıl Say is also a composer. We'll learn about all of those interests and talents. Episode, The Call of Istanbul. And then it's the Iceland Sound, and that explores Iceland's musical landscape, including instruments made from driftwood and much more. That's the new series, Season 7 of Now Hear This, with host and executive producer Scott Yu, bringing us the PBS series, and it's under the umbrella of Great Performances, and it is quite amazing and important to note that it is the first show about classical music on American primetime TV in 50 years. For more information, on the web, pbs.org, pbs.org, and certainly wvia.org, because you can see all of those programs Friday nights at 9 on WVIA-TV, wvia.org, wvia.org.